rolling, Bob?
Is it rolling, Bob?
Hi, folks, it's Chris Gregory here. Welcome to Bob Dylan, A Head Full of Ideas, Season 2.
Is it rolling, Bob?
Hope you're all keeping well out there. In this episode, I'm going to be talking about positively 4th Street, one of Dylan's celebrated hit singles, almost, from the 1965. And this piece is called Positively 4th Street, Dylan Confronts His Nemesis. Well, what is a nemesis? In ancient Greek religion, nemesis, also called Ramnousia or Ramnousia, ancient Greek goddess of Ramnos, is the goddess who enacts retribution against those who succumb to hubris, arrogance before the gods. It's quoted from Wikipedia. Thank you, Wikipedia. Positively 4th Street occupies a unique place in Bob Dylan's oeuvre. It was recorded at the Highway 61 sessions, but kept back for single release. Although musically similar to much of the material recorded for that epical album, its lyrics differ greatly in terms of construction and technique. While the rest of the tracks are characteristically ambiguous and employ streams of diverse imagery, this song is couched entirely in colloquial phrases, and its message appears to be completely unequivocal. As one of Dylan's best-known works, it regularly receives a prominent place in Best of Dylan lists. Dylan has played it live on over 100 occasions, and it has been covered by a number of artists. Despite this, the vast majority of critics and commentators have focused not on the artistry of Dylan's brilliantly crafted lyrics in this song, but on the notion that it consists of a venomous attack on Dylan's supposed enemies, especially the more conservative members of the folk establishment, who considered his Going Electric to be some kind of ideological betrayal. It is almost always a mistake to attempt to tie down any Dylan song by limiting it to being addressed to one person or a group of people. In fact, Positively 4th Street may actually be Dylan's most misunderstood song. When assessing Dylan as a poet, it is always important to remember his control of melody and instrumentation, and most importantly, his dramatic presentation of lyrics. All have an effect on how the words he sings stimulate listeners' imagination and touch their emotions. It might be said that too many commentators attempt to separate Dylan's lyrics from his performance of them. If one examines this song on the page, it certainly does come over as a vicious put-down. But in order to understand the true poetic effect of the words, it is necessary to consider they are set against a sprightly vocal tone and a rather cheerfully hummable melody line. This song was, after all, designed to be a hit. In his delivery, Dylan never sounds angry or bitter. Indeed, the sound of the original recording, dominated by Al Kooper's swirling organ and Mike Bloomfield's distinctive guitar lines, is positively joyful. Thus, the received meaning of the lyrics is modulated, which surely should lead the listener to question the veracity of the narrative. The first verse sets the tone for the rest of the song, throughout which the counterposing of the sweet melody and the pained lyrics continues. The next four verses reiterate the message, using the same light irony in the delivery, while that organ sweeps us along. You say I let you down, you know it's not like that. There is certainly a knowing tone in the voice now. Even the next line, if you're so hurt, why then don't you show it, is delivered with defiant panache, with Dylan extending the last word triumphantly. Then, for a moment, it seems as if we may be turning to serious matters. You say you've lost your faith, Dylan croons above the swirling organ. But any notion that the song is about to turn religious is immediately crushed. But that's not where it's at, Dylan sings. Now he seems to be positively laughing at the pretensions of the object of the song. You have no faith to lose, he cries, ending with another triumphant, and you know it. Insult is added to injury now, as what we can refer to as the narrator's nemesis is revealed as a fake believer. Dylan's use of rhyming in the song is quite significant. Here, it is used as to a rhyme with it, a technique called identical rhyme, which Dylan uses in 4 of the 6 verses here. The effect is dryly ironic and works to place further emphasis on the message that the narrator is piling up. The next verse follows on logically from the last line. I know the reason that you talk behind my back. Again, the narrator claims to know the object of the song better than he or she does. I used to be among the crowd you're in with. There may be a passing reference to Dobie Gray's mesmeric 1964 hit In the In Crowd, an unashamed celebration of trendiness which, rather like Positively 4th Street, is so unabashed in its declarations that it can easily be treated ironically, as Brian Ferry, the master of pop irony, does in his 1974 cover of the song. Again, Dylan is using common contemporary phrases for ironic effect. This has often been interpreted as referring to Dylan's former membership of the folk scene, which in Going Electric he has just rejected. But Dylan is being deliberately unspecific here. The only clue that really connects the song to this situation is the reference to 4th Street in the title. New York's 4th Street runs up the southern limit of Greenwich Village, the epicentre of the folk scene where Dylan made his name. But of course, virtually every American city has a 4th Street. The next lines are especially convoluted, as if somehow the narrator is now struggling to justify himself. He seems to be losing the cool he has maintained throughout the song so far. Do you take me for such a fool to think I might make contact with the one who tries to hide behind what he don't know to begin with? These lines, with their rather forced rhyme of back contact and the rushed enjambment to the final extended line, now began to sound rather more desperate, as if the narrator is somehow losing control. Again, the identical rhyme in with, begin with, testifies to a certain vulnerability that the narrator is now beginning to show. Here we have the only use of the gendered pronoun he, suggesting that the song's object is not a female and that this is not therefore a bitter love song. But he, especially in those days, was often used as a generic term for both men and women. The narrator now becomes increasingly petulant. In the next few lines, he crams in an entire conversation, though he noticeably reports only the words that the nemesis said to him. The compression here is really quite brilliant. You see me on the street, you always act surprised. You say, how are you? You don't mean it. Again, the narrator claims to know more about the nemesis than he does himself. The following lines are perhaps the most vituperative of all. Well, you know as well as me, you'd rather see me paralysed. You take paralysed in a number of ways. Perhaps this is one of the singer's detractors hoping his career will be cut short. Or perhaps the nemesis is a truly demonic figure. In the final line, Dylan demands, why don't you just come out once and scream it? By now, the supreme confidence with which the narrator had begun is failing. He's beginning to lose control. Again, the identical rhyme of it stroke it, as in the second verse, adds emphasis to the sense of futility that is now being expressed. By the penultimate verse, the narrator appears to be directing the apparent sarcasm of the rest of the song towards himself. In another convoluted line, he confesses, no, I do not feel that good when I see the heartbreaks you embrace. The juxtaposition of heartbreaks and embrace in this context is masterful. Both are commonly used words in romantic songs, of which Positively 4th Street is perhaps the extreme antithesis. But then he lightens the mood. If I was a master thief, perhaps I'd rob them. This is the nearest the song gets to symbolism. But by now, the narrator is sounding increasingly powerless and desperate. Now I know you're dissatisfied with your position and your place, he admits, juggling elements of assonance and alliteration around in a unique way. No love song, even one of rejection, has ever incorporated language like this. And then he admits his own helplessness. Don't you understand? He pleads. It's not my problem. This can be taken either as one of the cruelest lines of rejection ever, or a heartfelt admission of his own inadequacy. For once, the use of identical rhyme is dropped, adding emphasis to the cruelty of the word problem. In the extraordinary final verse, the narrator confronts his nemesis once and for all. Now he indulges in fantasy. "I wish that for just one time," he begins, "you could stand inside my shoes. And just for that one moment, I could be you." Then, for the first time since verse 1, we get a repetition for emphasis. "Yes, I wish that for just one time you could stand inside my shoes," which is followed by the final awful line of dismissal. "You'd know what a drag it is to see you." This stunning denouement is highly revealing. If the narrator was merely wanting his nemesis to see things from his point of view, he might have asked him to imagine what it would be like to see things through his eyes, a typical fantasy of a victim. But Dylan goes further. His narrator imagines himself standing in his nemesis's shoes. Thus, the final withering put-down can be taken two ways. The nemesis is meant to experience what a drag it is when he sees himself. The narrator is now apparently experiencing himself as the nemesis. Either way, it is a drag. Here, the use of identical rhyme is both devastatingly effective and extremely appropriate. Thus, positively, Fourth Street is far more than the rather nasty put-down of an enemy or a betrayer that it has often been characterised as. As the song reaches its climax, the multiple references to the narrator apparently knowing his nemesis's mind build up. In the final verse, he completes the process of identification by expressing the perverse wish to swap places with him. Thus, the two figures are revealed as being interchangeable. They are both, it seems, aspects of one consciousness, and the song is thus an exploration of human psychological duality. The singer reaches deep into the darkness of his own soul and conjures up a figure who represents all the cruelty, dishonesty, and lack of faith that lie within. Yet, in his treatment of the song in the original recording, Dylan sounds triumphant throughout. In Like a Rolling Stone, the hit single that positively Fourth Street was conceived as a follow-up to, what begins as an apparent attack on a particular individual, Miss Lonely, is transformed into a universalist hymn to individuality. But here, Dylan is more questioning, daring to go deeper, to confront those aspects of himself that he is not proud of. Positively Fourth Street is thus an extraordinary achievement, which wholly subverts the conventions of the pop song, using colloquial language to confront fundamental existential dilemmas. It is thus never an easy song to sing. One can barely imagine Joan Baez attempting it. Lucinda Williams, a great country blues rock singer who specialises in bitter emotions, does a remarkable cover which brings out the song's biting intensity to great effect. Of course, Lucinda has what you might call a more lived-in voice, which is probably more appropriate for this particular song. Dylan himself once stated that he actually preferred a version by the rockabilly crooner Johnny Rivers to his own reading of the song. Rivers' version, 1968, is indeed deeply empathetic. He abandons Dylan's triumphant tone and makes the song sound winsome and tragic. Brian Ferry's reading on his album Dylan-esque, 2007, treads a similar path. Both versions seem to make us feel sympathy for the narrator, recognising that this is a song about a creative soul who is struggling with his own demons. Mick Hucknall of Simply Red also recorded an interesting version which treats the lyrics as a kind of soulful confession. Dylan's own live development of the song seems to indicate his own dissatisfaction with his original recording. It was first featured in his electric sets with the band in a version performed in Sydney in 1966, where he stretches out the lyrics into an extended drawl, very much as he does with the other songs in the electric set, as he battles with an uncomprehending audience. In that case, one can see the song, much like the versions of Ballad of a Thin Man, I Don't Believe You, and Like a Rolling Stone, as being directed to the unbelievers in the crowd. Much later, the song is featured prominently in the tours with Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers of 1986 to 87. Later, it is performed on many occasions in the Never Ending Tour. In these versions, Dylan appears to take Johnny Rivers' lead, transforming the song into a tragic comic confession of his own vulnerability. The song, which was once an expression of proud, youthful defiance, now takes on a quality of ethereal beauty as the singer confronts that inner nemesis with the experience and the sad knowingness of age. And well, I do hope you enjoyed that. You'll find lots more stuff writing on Dylan on my website, which is called From the Pen of Chris Gregory, and you'll find that at chrisgregory.org. I'm also the author of Determined to Stand, the Reinvention of Bob Dylan, which is a very detailed study of Dylan's late work from Time Out of Mind onwards, also looking at the importance of the Never Ending Tour. The book can be bought from my website, chrisgregory.org, or on amazon.co.uk. If you enjoyed this podcast and you'd like to support the starving podcasters in their work, you can go to a website called Buy Me a Coffee. And if you put in buymeacoffee.com/ChrisGregoff, GREGOF, which they seem to have assigned to it, you can bung me a couple of quid or however much a coffee costs to show your appreciation. That'd be extremely nice if you did that. In the meantime, you might like to subscribe to the podcast, and see you next time. Bye.
Is it rolling, Bob?
Is it rolling, Bob?
Is it rolling, Bob?
Is it rolling, Bob?